Good afternoon, Portland. Hope this Wednesday is treating you well. We went last night to my daughter's high school back to school night where the parents get to go and sit in the classes, all the kids' classes, and hear what's going on and get a syllabus and learn about the grading schedule and all of that stuff. And for as much as I do not miss the drama of high school and the feelings I had as a teenager, you know, I often say I wish I was 17 again. I love the music. I love the movies from back in that time. But truth be told, it's hard. It's hard to be a teenager. And so as I was at school last night, my daughter's school, I kept thinking, these teachers are really cool. How come I didn't have cool teachers like this? And then I'm thinking, you know, this stuff is wasted on the young. I want to read things like The Great Gatsby and The Crucible and have that be my assignment for the day. Can you imagine if my only responsibility was to read The Great Gatsby, my only homework assignment? Oh, now there's other stuff I don't like too, like geometry. I'm not very good at that. Never good at math. Better in communicative. I was going to say communicative skills, but then I lost the word. So obviously that's not it either. But more in the humanities and things like that. But so much fun. I get so jealous when she gets, American history. She's in American studies this year. That's my favorite. It is my absolute favorite. I loved it. When I was homeschooling, that's what we did the majority of because I love spending time in American history. I adore it. And I'm sad sometimes with American history that some of the things we learned in the past, we quite still haven't learned our lesson and are doing today. Oh, I won't go into that right now. I need to stay in a good mood. Today is a show where I get to introduce you to one of the people I love in all the Christian book writers and preaching today going on. There's one woman who has just really reminded me of my love for the church. And that person is Nadia Boltz Weber. And you'll remember last week I talked about the conference I went to, Why Christian. She was one of the ones who put that on with Rachel Held Evans. So those two are pretty big in Christian internet type things, web preaching, books, speakers, you know, Christian speakers all around. Well, Nadia, actually, I read her first book, when was it? About a year ago or two. Her first book was called Pastrix. So Pastrix, Pastrix, The Cranky, Beautiful Faith of a Sinner and a Saint. And this book had gotten a lot of praise before I read it. So I knew a lot of people liked it. If you look on the cover, it's a woman tattooed up, sitting there. I'll put the link on the Rose City Forum Facebook page so you can have a look at it yourself and order it if you wish. It wasn't something that drew my attention right away, I guess. It was one of those books that I knew I needed to read, but I just kept putting it off and off. Well, once I read it, of course, I loved it. I loved it because in a time where everybody is blogging and young people are talking so much about leaving the church and the church not meeting my needs and blah, blah, blah. Well, Nadia was writing a book towards why she found the church and why she loves the church. And, you know, she's a pastor, so why she loves pastoring and her congregation. And wow, she's got some great stories. But she had a really, you know, I think her parents are really great, but she made life tough on herself. I think growing up, she got into some scary situations, but God has certainly touched her heart, and through these things, she has touched just so many others, so many others. So Nadia Boltz Weber is going to be on the show in a little bit, and she's going to be talking about her book, Accidental Saints. So she will be talking about that in a little bit, but I wanted to talk a little bit about her book, Pastrix, and what it is and what it did for me. And like I said, you know, in a time where everybody's like, I don't need the church. I don't need the church. I can believe in Jesus without the church. I don't need, you know, the hypocrisy, or I don't need the crowds of people, things like that. Well, Nadia gave language and showed me why the church is a beautiful thing. And it certainly is. I mean, her book is really worth reading again, that book. But specifically for me, Nadia C. became an ELCA pastor, Lutheran Church, Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. So when she was drawn back to the church and drawn back into preaching, she went to the Lutherans. She went to the Lutherans. Now, the reason this is so significant for me is because basically I am a prenatal Lutheran. My mother was Lutheran. My grandmother was Lutheran. Her mother before her, Lutheran. So Lutheran has been my life, basically. And, you know, and sometimes in shows, if I have an evangelical guest or, you know, talk to an evangelical author, there's some things that really surprise me. It still surprises me that churches do not let women preach. I know you have your reasons for it, and I know we interpret scripture differently, but because I grew up in the LCA, I had women pastors. It was never a thing that was even debated as a kid. You know, as a kid, I didn't know any different, but it was just something I always grew up with. Well, I did get frustrated, actually, with the Lutheran Church once I started working for the Lutheran Church. And just like any place that you work, it becomes a job. And you start to see office politics, and you start to see that not everyone is perfect, which they shouldn't be. I get that. I get that. But when a denomination, it actually turned me off from denominations altogether, because at the time, I didn't like how certain decisions were being made in that affected our church that were being made somewhere in Minnesota. So the denomination headquarters are in Minnesota, and they had control, or they could tell, or they could move pastors around, you know, all around the country. I didn't like that. I got pretty angry. And so when I left my job as a youth pastor in the Lutheran Church, I actually left the Lutheran Church altogether. It was good because Ed, being in, he did not grow up a believer. And so when he married me, you know, he became a believer before he married me, but he was baptized after he married me. And so the Lutheran Church was basically all he knew as well. It just so happened that the church we were attending, he was always Andy's husband, right? So because I was the youth pastor there. So through no fault of his own, or anyone else's, he was just always Andy's husband. And so we needed, when I left the church and left youth ministry and we had our kids, we needed to go someplace where we were Ed and Andy, you know, just a couple, a new family coming into the church, no history, things like that. So we actually started going to a lot of non-denominational churches, which I loved. Some I loved, some didn't quite fit our needs, things like that. We ended up getting really involved wherever we lived in whatever church that we found to be involved with. And for us, they turned out to be mega churches, right? Like we went to churches in Orange County, California, and in Seattle, north of Seattle, that were huge churches. And they were perfect for us because we could volunteer as much or as little as we wanted to. We just fell into the back of the crowd. You kind of go in on Sunday and not really know anyone. And for someone who worked in a church, this was a real blessing, let me tell you. So I was, you know, I always kind of like said, I don't need this anymore. I don't need a denomination. I definitely don't need to be Lutheran anymore, even though the rest of my family stayed in the Lutheran church. It wasn't because that I disagreed with their faith or the things they taught, not at all. It was basically because I didn't want to be in a political situation in my church. And that's how I felt it was. Well, coming back to my original point, Nadia is a Lutheran pastor. And so for me to listen or read, I should say, read her words and think about how beautiful and how meaningful the sacraments are, I never found liturgy. In fact, to this day, liturgy kind of, I shake when I hear it. Such bad memories for me, such bad memories of being in church, not abusive or anything, but being a kid and sitting in church and just praying for church to be over. Because you know what? I didn't understand any of it. The sermons were not on my level. They were to my parents. There's no reason a child should be understanding everything that the pastor says. But we, you know, our Lutheran church back then, kids were in service with their parents. And then afterwards, everybody went to Sunday school. So for me, the liturgy, it had no meaning because to me, it was just more nonsense, so to speak, cutting time into my Sunday as a kid, as a teenager. Even to this day, if I listen to the liturgy in the Lutheran church, because it's the same, you know, so often, I can tell exactly what I had been thinking as a teenager when I heard some of these words or when we got to a certain part of the liturgy. So for me, it doesn't bring up very good memories, but it was great for me to read Nadia's words because she shared the beauty of the liturgy and she shared the beauty of the sacraments. And for me to read that, I think was really important. I think it was important that I got a different perspective of the things that made me shudder are the things that drew her to the Lutheran church. And when I did go to the Y Christian Conference, we did go through a, you know, a very formal liturgical worship service, and it was beautiful, no doubt about it. I still did shudder a little bit at some of the liturgy just because it brought back some memories, but I could see how people find it meaningful and beautiful. And for me, that was important. Well, I did this interview with Nadia and talked to her before the Y Christian Conference happened. So when you hear my words with Nadia, listen to her share about accidental saints. And just know that when I talked to her, it was before I actually went back to the Y Christian Conference. And I'll talk a little bit more about that after our third segment. So go ahead and stick around in conversation. You'll hear my interview with Nadia Boltz Weber and her book, Accidental Saints, in a few minutes here on Rose City Forum. I'm talking today with Nadia Boltz Weber. She's the author of the New York Times bestseller, Pastrix. She is also the founding pastor of House for All Sinners and Saints, a Lutheran church in Denver, Colorado. She, like I said, is an author. She's written for many magazines, articles. She has been on NPR. She's been on CNN. She blogs at her website, www.nadiaboltzweber.com. We're here today to talk about her new book, Accidental Saints. She will be in Portland Monday, October 12th, coming up from 7 to 9 p.m. She'll be at the Trinity Episcopal Cathedral in Northwest Portland. Her Accidental Saints book event will be a reading, a Q&A. She'll do a book signing, and of course, a ham raffle. What is a ham raffle?
Well, every stop on the book tour, I try and raise money for whatever kind of, you know, nonprofit or charity that the hosting congregation has locally. And so, like, we raised $900 last night for a congregation for their kind of like a meal program for people experiencing homelessness. So, yeah, and I raffle off various items that I talk about in the book throughout the night. And then at the very end, I raffle off a ham because who wouldn't want to go home with a ham?
Well, the book is called Accidental Saints, Finding God in All the Wrong People. And I remember in the spring when I interviewed Rachel Held Evans, she told me all about your book. She had a chapter in her book, Searching for Sunday, talking about the sinners and the saints. And I had asked her, what do you think, or who do you think are modern day saints of this time? And she actually stopped and she said, you know, who's got a book coming out kind of about this is Nadia Boltz Weber, a book called Accidental Saints. And so I was looking forward to your book. I was looking forward to it, but it turned out to be completely different than I expected, and in a good way. I expected to read about like Mother Teresa types, you know, of course, but instead I really read about people who go unnoticed by the crowd. What led you to write Accidental Saints?
Well, you know, I think we have a lot of books out there about sort of gleaming examples of perfect piety, or, you know, a sort of system for having a more victorious life, whatever that means, or being purpose driven, or, you know, just like endless opportunities for self-improvement, none of which has actually ever worked for me. And I feel like what is actually celebrated in the saints, not is a human being's ability to be saintly, but God's ability to do really beautiful, redeeming things through broken, ordinary people. So, I mean, I like sort of focusing on what crazy, weird, unexpected thing is God doing, rather than here's something to really inspire you to try and be a better person than you'll ever be able to pull off being.
So who is your target audience for this book? Is it for fellow Christians or non-Christians or maybe those who have been hurt for the church? Who are you writing for when you wrote Accidental Saints?
Well, I guess I sort of have an interest in people who have tried everything and nothing's worked. And whether that's like they really tried being a good evangelical Christian and couldn't pull it off, or they tried being a really serene yogi and, you know, meditation, and that didn't work. So those are kind of my people, the people who've never managed to improve themselves.
One of the things I love about the book is that you don't really hold yourself up, so to speak. You mention a lot of the mistakes you've made, and you're flat out honest with them and about them. And one of the things that bothers me, because I do it myself, is judging other people. And we all do it, and we don't want to do it. But you even tell the story of, you know, being a pastor and judging some of the people and making judgments, you know, against some of the people who go to your church and things like that, and how wrong it is. But how I love in the book, you particularly talk about Larry, who hopefully listeners will read about when they pick up the book, but just about how it was hard for you to accept Larry for all that he was, and how in turn he turned out to teach you a few things. So what do you say that about the way we just judge each other so much, or how do we get away from that?
Well, I think it really is this circuitous way of having compassion for ourselves as well. Like when we can see that this person who's annoying us or who we'd rather not be around is made in the image of God, then it allows us to sort of be a little easier on ourselves. Because almost always, if I'm really being reactive about another person, it's because they're demonstrating something I can't stand in myself, you know? Like, if I don't like it in me, I'm not going to find it charming in you, you know? And so I think that if we can see the face of God in these people, or just realize that the ways in which the shape of our heart can change through these unexpected encounters with people we'd never choose, like, it allows us to actually have compassion for ourselves on some level. That's been my experience.
I think my favorite accidental saint that you mention in your book is your intern, Alex. And this was the story that you shared about Christmas time, 2012. And you talk about what we were kind of all struggling with, and that would be the murders at Sandy Hook Elementary School. A devastating time for all of us. I mean, gosh, that feeling is still with me. But in this story, you say that you and Alex were preparing a service for remembering the deceased. And you said, okay, we need to, you know, pray for 26 people and have, I think it was a bell that was rung or something, 26 bells or rings of the bell. And he said, well, we need to pray for 27 deaths, not just 26. And when he said that, there was a feeling inside. I'm like, oh, that feeling of utter, you know, I don't want to say hate, but disturbance that, yes, you in fact do need to pray for the killer as well as those he killed. And yeah, so that would have killed me on the inside. And I know that it bothered you too. But how are you feeling about this event 2.5 years later? Like, how do you feel about all of that?
I didn't really hold a, like, I wasn't like upset with Alex. I mean, only for just that moment. And I was upset because I knew he was right and I didn't want to face it, you know? So yeah, it's the worst. I mean, it's absolutely the worst. But the thing is that how can it be true for me if it's not true for everyone, right? Like, we have to see it as good news that it's true for the person we don't want it to be true for, because it means it's also true for us, right?
Well, that's true. And it is, it's so hard to see. I know we're all children of God and we all belong to Him, but when we get on, I swear, social media, like Facebook or Twitter or whatnot, I mean, we're just, it just seems like a big judge fest. Like everybody's looking at one another and, you know,
what we actually love, you know, what we really love is to be able to place all of our guilt on one person and let them carry it for us. So like with Brian Williams, the newscaster, when, you know, he didn't falsify a news account, he exaggerated a personal story, which, by the way, we have all done. And every time we lie a little bit about a personal story or exaggerate it, there's an icky feeling we get, right? And then, like, what do you do with these icky feelings? You just kind of hold on to them and they build up. And so good thing somebody like Brian Williams comes along so we can just put them all on him, because how dare he, right? And it's like a way of Elvis all the time. Rachel Donazal, who pretended to be Black, it's like, thank God for her, so I never have to look at any of the ways I've participated in cultural appropriation or the way it makes me uncomfortable when I think I kind of reinvented myself a few times in my life, right? Because I don't want to look at that. And so what's great is to be able to just post really hateful memes about her. And so this is a sort of sin in the liberal world. And like, I don't even talk about conservatives. They take care of themselves. Like that is a ridiculousness that is a caricature of itself. So like, it doesn't need me to comment on it, post memes about it, nothing. I'm concerned about my tribe, you know, like my group of people, and because I'm included in it. And so there's this whole like calling out culture, like calling people out for this and calling them out for that. And it is some prideful nonsense, because it almost never accomplishes the thing fixing the thing we're actually upset about. And so if I'm going to call someone out, it better be me. It better be me.
No, really, that is the truth. That is the truth. All right. Well, we're going to pause the conversation for a few moments, but when we return, we'll have more of Nadia Bolz-Weber talking about her book, Accidental Saints, Finding God in All the Wrong People. We'll continue this in just a few minutes here. I'm talking today with Nadia Bolz-Weber. She wrote the book Pastrix, a New York Times best-selling memoir. And we're here today to talk about her book, Accidental Saints, Finding God in All the Wrong People. She will be here in Portland on Monday, October 12th, from 7 to 9 p.m. She'll be at Trinity Episcopal Cathedral in Northwest Portland. She'll be doing book reading, question and answers, book signing, and of course, like we talked about in the previous section, a ham raffle. So you don't want to miss that. Well, Nadia, I said this before, I think what I love about this book is that it's not a book that you raise yourself up and say, oh, here's how I did things, and this is how you should do them too. But mostly I read it as a book like, well, here's how I screwed up, and here is how God has shown me so much grace. And I appreciate that. But there's one story that you share that I was having a hard time with. One of the mistakes you admitted to making. And it might seem small to you or to other people. But when I read it, I was like, oh, this would have killed me a little bit. And that was when you had promised a long time ago to do a couple's wedding. And then later on, also booked a very significant speaking event in Australia. And due to calendar conflicts, those things conflicted. And so you had them both booked at the same time. And just because you shared that, you know, the couple went through all, you know, made sure the date was okay with you and went through all the hoops that they needed to go through. And then it turned out that you needed to go to Australia for this event that was double booked, and you take responsibility for it being a mistake. But I'm just thinking that is the most amount of grace, I mean, from that couple. I think I had a little anxiety attack just reading that. So was that hard for you to admit, or was that hard story for you to tell? What did you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, that one, I actually, it's a
even though it was sort of a joy to tell that story, because it was so, the experience of being forgiven is a holy thing. And every time I see those, that couple at church, I'm filled with gratitude, and I love them. Like, I see them and I just go, I just love them so much. Like, I'm so grateful because they forgave me. And that is like,
well, and it is such a beautiful story of forgiveness and grace. And you're right. That does show that picture.
The really icky one was where I, like, that guy I didn't like very much, and I left his name off the email list. It's like reminding people to sign up for the retreat. That is a gross thing that I could have taken to my grave. Like, literally nobody knew. There would be no way for anyone to know that happened. It wasn't like, well, I better admit it before it's public. No, man, I could have just kept that one to myself. But the point of writing it isn't to say, like, worst of sinners am I. The point of writing it was, I was hoping I'm not the only one who's done stuff like that, right? My hope is that there was something liberating and somebody could exhale because they're like, oh my gosh, I've done that too. Like, that's all I'm ever doing is, like, I call it a form of leadership that I call, screw it, I'll go first, right? Like, I'll just like admit this thing, hoping that it allows somebody to respond about themselves, right? Rather than just have a reaction about me, I want people to have a response about themselves. And so if the only thing that happens is people read that and they have a reaction of like, she's horrible, and that's it, that's as far as it goes, that's not my audience, right? Put the book down. Like, that, it's not for you, right? I mean, it's why I put it up front in the book, just to go, just so you know, this is who you're dealing with, right?
Right, right.
So, but the point, the bigger point was the fact that somehow that man felt loved by me and the church, and it was like being there was an amazing experience for him before he died. And like, that is a mercy I didn't deserve, and it had nothing to do with what I did right. That was just God going, look, Nadia, you're completely an ass, but like, I need this man to find a church at the end of his life where he can be loved. And that was the experience that man had, despite me, right? So then that points to God and not me, right? So.
Yeah, yeah. And there's another part of the book, and I don't want to give any spoilers for the listeners, but honestly, there was a huge shock for me toward the end of your book. And you mentioned a friend, your friend Bruce, throughout your story. And, in the later half of the book, I'll just share that you share about Bruce's huge need for forgiveness and grace. The man had a huge need for forgiveness and grace. And it reminds me of a story that we just talked about last week, and it happened last month, right in the middle of the Ashley Madison case. We were talking about how a man was on the Ashley Madison website and was so afraid that he would be judged and let go from his seminary professor position and his church and things like that, that he committed suicide. And mm-hmm. and it's so hard because he had a feeling he'd be judged, and like I said, and lose his family and his job. So he took his own life, but he never got to see if that grace and forgiveness would have been there. Like, all of his friends were saying, oh, we totally would have shown grace and forgiveness, and we just wish he was back. And I believe that, but I also know how hard it is when somebody does something wrong. We just attack on the judgmental side. And so I'm wondering about your friend Bruce and what your relationship is like with him now. And has he received grace and forgiveness in this horrible situation that he's in?
That I don't know, honestly. I mean, he'll be in prison for the next 10 years. So, and I have spoken to him and written to him, not a lot, but a couple times, and sort of reminded him that he is so completely, loved and forgiven. So I hope that it's taken hold. I do. Because the thing is I think we have this weird relationship with God where we think being in quote, right relationship with God means we never have to bug him or her, like, meaning like we've cleaned up ourselves so much and we're so righteous that we never need God's grace, never need mercy, grace, nothing like that. Like, don't worry about us, we got it, right? But I think being in right relationship is to continually understand how much we need God's grace and to admit these things about ourselves so that God can be the redemptive, forgiving, restorative God that God's always wanted to be for us. That's being in right relationship, allowing God to be God for us. Like in the Adam and Eve story, how would that story have been different? I was told the Adam and Eve story is largely a story about the danger of disobedience, right? Well, what if when God said, "Where are you?" What if they just went, we screwed up? What if they just, like, if they didn't have shame and they just said, "We screwed up," and like we listened to the wrong voice? And then God could be this forgiving, redemptive, restorative God. And instead, what they did was they were filled with shame and they hid and they blamed and they made excuses instead of actually just admitting they needed God's grace. How would that story have been different?
So I'm thinking that if Adam and Eve just had Brene Brown, then we'd all be good and none of us would have had shame to deal with in the first place. When you talk about that a little bit in biblical relationship or story as well, you talk about Peter and all the things Peter did, but mainly denying Christ three times and how shameful that must have been. But he received the grace and mercy from Jesus. But then you relate it to Judas, who is very deserving of judgment and shame for sure. But Judas decided to take his own life. And so we don't know what happened with Judas or if he would have been forgiven.
Yeah, there was no Easter for Judas. Like he checked out before the resurrection. That's the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life, is that that man was filled with shame and remorse and the guilt of sin and checked out before Easter. Oh my gosh.
Nadia, why did you write this book for us? What do you want readers, everybody who reads your book, to take away, to end the book and say, wow, this is what I got from reading Accidental Saints?
Oh, I guess just this idea that, look, all of this is actually for you. It's all for you, right? This grace is for you in your imperfect, shimmering beauty. like every single one of us, and it's around us. I think the most powerful force in the world is the grace of God. And it's revealed all the time around us. And so I hope people just start collecting their own stories of like, this thing is real. This thing is real. I know it's crazy, but it's real.
Well, Nadia, thanks so much for letting us talk with you for a little bit, sharing with Portland listeners everything about Accidental Saints and getting to know you a little bit as well. Nadia will be at Trinity Episcopal Cathedral on Monday night, October 12th from 7 to 9 p.m. You can buy your book there. You could buy it in advance and have her sign it there. And so, Nadia, I just wanted to say thanks. Thanks for being here. And I guess I will see you soon at the Why Christian event in Minneapolis.
Oh, thanks so much. I'll see you soon.
And we'll continue our conversation here on the Rose City Forum in just a few moments. I just shared with you the interview I had with Nadia Boltz-Weber about her book, Accidental Saints, Finding God in All the Wrong People. And I have to say, I did really enjoy her book. And I know you got that from my conversation with her, but I think it's a great read. I think it's a good reminder that God's children are everywhere. It's not, I mean, of course, Mother Teresa, the Pope, very holy, very lovely. But the saints, we are the saints, are we not? The sinners and the saints, we are together. And sometimes you find God in the places, the people that you least expect it. And that was such a great reminder. I love how her book wasn't a how-to book. Or it wasn't even a memoir. Her first book, Pastrix, was a memoir. And that was about her life. This was more about other people and how she responded to other people and the meaning of God's grace in her life when dealing with other people. And for sure, that is a reminder I need every day of my life. Now, when I was talking to Nadia, this was before I went to the Y Christian Conference a couple weeks ago. So that was beforehand. I did get a chance to meet her briefly. I wasn't going to, oh, that's not true. I met her once at a restaurant. So I did meet her at a restaurant and I introduced myself. And this was after the interview. So I said, you know, thanks for coming on KKPZ and Rose City Forum. And so that was a brief introduction. Well, as you know, that tragedy that occurred in my family recently, I found out about it while I was at the Y Christian Conference. So as I was leaving the hotel room to go to Cleveland, I saw Nadia in the hotel lobby and one of the other speakers and started talking, not about what happened, but just about the conference. And Nadia asked a simple question. She said, well, how did you like the conference? And honestly, I could have said it was fine. It was great. Thanks. Bye. But I was emotional. And so she said, how was the conference? And I'm like, oh, I found out my cousin just died. And that was, you know, I don't know. I was hurting or whatever, but she just came over and she gave me a big hug. And she basically said, life really sucks sometimes. And, you know, it was just nice. It was really nice. And so I appreciated that. And I appreciate anyone actually who has that sort of empathy. Someone who can, when you're really sad or depressed or angry, cannot just come up to you and hug you and say, oh, it'll get better, or it was in God's plan, or in this case, you know, well, you know, God's taking care of him. And yes, that's all true. That's all true. But sometimes you just want to have someone hug you and say, wow, that really stinks. That really stinks. I bet you're really mad right now. I bet you're really mad. I'd be really mad too. I mean, you need that sometimes, don't you? Don't we all need that? So I appreciated that a lot. And also because I pre-recorded this interview a while ago, it was before the Roseburg shooting. So if you remember in the first segment, I asked her about, we were talking about the Sandy Hook shooting in 2012. And I said, wow, I would have a really hard time praying for the shooter, praying for the murderer in that situation. And we talked about that a little bit. Little did I know that last Thursday, the same thing would happen so close to home, so close to home. And I felt it. I felt it again. God, how can I pray? How can I pray for this person that went in and shot all these people because he was looking for fame, or obviously mentally ill, or who knows what. But yeah, I have to pray for him. I have to, because Jesus said I have to. And I even have to forgive, even though that I didn't know any of the victims. There has to be forgiveness. And that is hard for me to grasp. So when I read books by Nadia Bolz-Weber and people like Nadia, I'm reminded that this stuff is hard. This stuff is hard for us as human beings, and we need God. We cannot do it without God. It's impossible. It's absolutely impossible. And it humbles me. It humbles me a great deal. But so thankful for people who can bring that out in me. You also have a chance to see Nadia. You can meet her on Monday coming up, October 12th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Trinity Episcopal Cathedral in Northwest Portland. I think you should go. I think you should show up on Monday night. I think you will love Nadia. I think you will love her teaching and joking around. And like she said, they have a raffle where they raffle off certain items that she mentions in the book, and then that all goes to charity. So actually, I'm excited to see or hear what Trinity Episcopal Cathedral decides to use that charity money towards. So we'll go ahead and put the details of that on the Rose City Forum Facebook page, as well as links to Pastrix and Accidental Saints. And when talking about people who do sometimes supernatural things that I find it hard to do myself, I wanted to bring up a story that my friend Christian Pyatt shared last Sunday, as they were getting ready for church. Christian's wife, Amy, is the pastor at First Christian Church downtown. You know, that old church, beautiful building. I went to a wedding there once. Just gorgeous. Beautiful historic building downtown. And Amy was getting ready for her sermon, I believe, and it was right before church, so people were starting to congregate. Well, two protesters, I guess you would call them, stood outside their church and started yelling, and they had their signs on, you know, repent, repent, or you'll go to hell, shouting at them, shouting even slurs at them. I mean, just angry. And some people called the cops. Some people were running, kind of being defensive and getting mad, saying, get away from here, kind of thing like that. And that's probably what I would have done as well. I think that would have been my initial reaction. Amy did something different. This is why she's the pastor of that church. Amy brought out a cart of, I don't know if it was coffee or some other kind of drink. She brought out macaroons. I'll remember the macaroons. She brought those out as well. And she said, here, have some food, have some snacks. And they said, you know, we would never accept that from you. And just, you're going to hell. They didn't like some of the ways that Amy's church is accepting of LGBT friends and Christians, and they didn't like that. And so they were going to tell her and tell everybody else around the city and carry signs around their necks yelling at her. But she never raised her voice, and she spoke to them in a loving way. She offered them dessert and drink, and she said, brother, you know, God's not asking you to be like this. You know, God loves you. God loves us. Like, very calm, very loving. And he piped down. Rumor has, or you can read the blog post. I can put it up on the Rose City Forum Facebook page for you as well. But I guess he stopped yelling at her. He stopped yelling at them. But then they said, well, that didn't stop them from yelling at other people, but just Amy. But really, that is not my first reaction when I see people judging things on the street, especially when I'm walking around downtown with my kids. You know, like, it's funny. I will walk them down. We serve, although we used to serve a lot more in the past, but we do a lot of feeding downtown and helping with the homeless and just coming down with sandwiches sometimes and passing those out. And we pass a variety of people, and they're not always clean in their language or their actions, things like that. And it, you know, it doesn't even bother me. It doesn't even bother me. As long as I know my kids are with me, you know, and they're safe and it's Portland. I just love Portland. I feel okay about it. But I tell you, it's much harder for me to walk by those people on the street with signs around their neck saying, you know, you're going to burn in hell, or, you know, God hates fill in the blank. That one is harder for me to explain to my kids. That one is harder for me to explain. How are these people claiming to be Jesus lovers and yet doing the things that they're doing by basically not following what Jesus says, and even swearing, some of them using swear words? It's just it's sad is what it is. It's sad. And so for Amy Pyatt to go down there and bring peace with her, I admire that. I admire that a lot, and people can do that. And that's why people like Nadia and Amy are pastors, because they can bring peace to a very stressful situation and bring the love of Christ inside. So Portland's lucky to have the Pyatts running a church, that's for sure. Well, Portland, I hope that you were able to learn something from Nadia Boltz Weber and the interview with her. I encourage you to buy her books. I loved Accidental Saints. I really did. I loved Pastrix, but I really liked her second book a lot. So pick that up. I'll include the Pyatt article as well, Christian Pyatt's article about his wife as well, and you can read that. I hope you have a great afternoon, and I'll be excited to catch up with you here on the next Rose City Forum.